Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Some councils are auditing schools and urging a ban on the terms boy and girl.
For those who are in an open or polyamorous relationship, your relationships are holy.
A gay black woman's victim status is less than that of a black trans woman, who ranks below a black Muslim trans woman.
We don't want to just win the argument about sexuality. We want to use this as a gospel opportunity.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The thrill of victory. The agony of defeat.
Spanning the globe. Because we have the internet. And you send stories and articles to idea@wretched.org. And so, I find myself with a desk full of all sorts of disparate stories. But, well, that's not good or disciplined radio. So, we cobble them together, slap them into a single pile, and put the name Wide World of Christian Stories... Call it a day. This is Wretched Radio. Let's travel around the world, shall we? All kinds of things happening in Washington, D.C. Actually, a little bit of good news before we get to all the bad stuff. A little bit of good news. The Biden administration, the Secretary of State, his name is Sam. No, he's not Sam Brownback. The name of the Secretary of State released a statement. This is from the Biden State Department on international religious freedom. Antony Blinken. Antony, or is it Anthony?
Antony.
Antony Blinken. Mm-hmm. Called religious freedom a co-equal right. Hey, well, that's good. Let's see if that actually plays out, because it doesn't seem to be. But nevertheless, Sam Brownback, who served for 3 years as the head of the State Department's International Religious Freedom Office during the Trump administration, quote, when President Joe Biden was senator, Biden and I was working with him in the Senate. Joe was good on religious freedom issues and worked and supported them. Okay. All right. Let's maybe hope that has some implications for those of us who are rather concerned about the way this is going. And by the way, good reason for it, because you see things like this. The Biden FDA says it may legalize the abortion by mail decision that was made by Bill Clinton. Remember the good old days when it was Bill Clinton as president? Yeah, me too. How interesting is that, isn't it? Nevertheless, when it's the abortion pill. Kills your baby. Convenience of your own home. Well, Joe Biden may legalize abortion by mail so that you can actually receive the pill in your mailbox. If the USPS ever gets it there. See, that's actually, maybe there's some good news in this. We sent out a package. Somebody ordered something from the Wretched store last August. We just got it back about 2-3 weeks ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Somehow it got lost in the shuffle out there and finally returned. So maybe that'll be some good news. And see how we did that right there?
The baby will be old enough to vote before they get it.
And I know that they won't vote for the guy who wanted to defend life but had bad tweets, because bad tweets are so bad as babies die by mail. Senator Brownback pointed out how the Biden administration has continued these sanctions against China that Donald Trump implemented. The U.S. sanctioned a Chinese Communist Party official for the mistreatment of religious minorities, and a leading State Department official called out China for its blatant disregard for religious freedom. Let's hope that that applies here. Our Secretary of State said religious freedom is a human right. It goes to the heart of what it means to be human, to think freely. Sorry. I love these concepts. I just wish we were afforded them. To change our beliefs as our hearts and minds lead us to do so, to express those beliefs in public and in private. The secretary pointed out how religious freedom is enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which Prince Harry says is bonkers. His words, not mine. Prince Harry, who's done a bang-up job of slandering his pop. I guess that's kind of his issue. He doesn't like the way that he was raised by Prince Charles, but he didn't just want to throw his father under the bus. No, grandma and grandpa got tossed under there too, hey, just the other day, and even though the man died recently, stating the reason that Prince Charles was such a rotten dad is because he had rotten parents. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. I got to tell you, the church has got to counter that narrative. It is so stacked against you, mom and dad, when it comes to the narrative about honoring father and mother. Harry does it. He's celebrated. He should be condemned for it. Are you kidding me? Talking about your father? Look, I'm no fan of Prince Charles. I wouldn't trash my dad. Why would you do such a thing? Oh, yeah, because you don't honor father and mother. It's okay to do that. When there was a statistic, I believe that we read it yesterday, about the number. There was an individual who's an ER doctor. The number of sermons, having asked hundreds of different people who contemplated and tried to commit suicide. Have you ever heard a sermon on suicide? None. Zero. Zip. And I would add to that, have we been hearing any sermons or references or repeated themes about honoring father and mother? This is a big deal in evangelical Christianity. There are so many books that are written about raising little ones, training them up, disciplining them. But you start getting into the teen years, it's pretty scant. And then you get into the adult years, woo! By the way, Margie Tripp just wrote a book. I don't have the copy in front of me. She wrote a book about how you can reconcile with your adult children. You can find it at Shepherd's Press or just Google Margie Tripp. T-R-I-P-P. There's just very, very little. That book was like a beacon. A book to help parents deal with their kids that have separated from them because they're such idiots, which is the narrative these days. And Prince Harry, he just keeps it going and going. Let's keep traveling around the globe, shall we? To Atlanta we go. You recall the young man who shot and murdered 8 people at massage parlors. It looks like, from Fulton County District Attorney, they want the death penalty. And they want to call it a hate crime. I've never run into a murder that was a love crime, but nevertheless, they want to call it a hate crime and seek the death penalty. This is just a tragic story. And this really causes Christians to rethink what our attitude is about the death penalty. Genesis 9, it's described for us post-flood. It's reiterated, I believe it's more than alluded to, in Romans 13. When the government bears the sword, it's an execution blade to deal with really bad people. And even though we grieve for the parents of this kid, who it seems from all the reports, just nice Baptist folks raising up their boy, this disaster happens, and he's going to potentially be facing the death penalty. And we can mourn about that, but I don't think we should be fighting against that. And we've seen that in evangelical circles, haven't we? Somebody's committed a bunch of heinous crimes, they're facing the death penalty, but they get saved, and hopefully they actually did get saved, and then evangelicals try to say, well, therefore you shouldn't do the death penalty. Hold on. That does not have anything to do with the realm of the government and their authority to execute people who murder other people. I did read something in this article that I did not know, and I don't understand this. Everybody, is focusing on that most of these folks, I believe 6 out of 8 were Asian. Did you know their ages? This one, I'm just going to read the ages. 69. 61, 63, 74 years old, working at the massage parlor. Did you know that was going on? I had no idea that was who got murdered there. Let's remember the death penalty. It is actually a high view of life, not a low view. That's what we get tagged with, isn't it? Hey, you people say that you're pro-life and then you want the death penalty. That's because we're pro-life. It actually has a transcendent view of life, a higher view of life than the view that says just keep them locked up. And by the way, speaking of people being locked up, sitting on a bench outside of the TJ Maxx waiting for Mrs. Friel, the well-worn husband bench outside of TJ Maxx. And this man sits down next to me and struggles, you could tell, challenges, needed some new pants. And I talked to him for maybe 20 minutes. And it's clear that the fellow had some issues and some struggles. Do you know where he's living? The streets. Do you know what his option is? Jail. That's just, and I, as I was listening to a presentation from Dr. Charles Hodges about the medical aspects of mental illness, is there such a thing? And his conclusion is, for the overwhelming vast majority of times, no, it has nothing to do with biological health. It's all a part of the fall. And we used to have places where these people could go because they needed help and they needed to be protected from themselves and from others. And we in our progressive state, thanks in part to the Kennedy family, have done away with all of those institutions. I got to tell you, well, I know the liberals think, oh, institutionalizing somebody, having somebody live underneath a bridge, have to beg for a pair of britches. I got to tell you, that's a low view of life. Christians constantly, at least we should, constantly have a consistent high view of human life. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thank you so much for being here today at Wretched Radio. If you didn't listen, we'd be doing this to... Now, I'm not exactly sure why we'd be doing it, but by the grace of God, you are listening. You choose to tune in here every day, and for that, we are thankful, and we'd also be grateful if you would prayerfully consider joining our mission in reaching millions around the world with the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. We also strive to equip people to preach the gospel and to help strengthen the local church. You can join our efforts by becoming a monthly gospel partner. Wretched will always honor your generosity with faithful stewardship and full accountability, because we fully understand without you, there would be no us. We would be eternally grateful if you would consider partnering with us by visiting wretched.org/donate or by texting the word wretched to the number 44321. That's wretched.org/donate or text the word wretched to 44321. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Yes, you want to save money because, after all, you're a Christian and that's what we want to do, save money, but never at the expense of our family's health and peace of mind should a family member fall ill. That is why I'd like to commend you MediShare, the gold standard of healthcare sharing. You will save, on average, $500 per month as a family. How much will you save? It takes 2 minutes. 844-34-BIBLE. And if you think, well, this isn't very good, you get free telehealth services with MediShare, a huge network of doctors with MediShare, and great customer support. And fellow Christians will pray for you. MediShare, 400,000 members strong. Peace of mind and savings. Simply call 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE.
Sometimes you got to give the devil his due. He's good at what he does. He's been a murderer from the beginning. His MO has not changed in 6,000 years. He is a deceiver. But you know what? Jesus is much better at what he does, which is truth-telling and life-giving. If you've ever found yourself deceived by Satan, listen, you don't have to remain there. Biblical counseling can help you learn to use the Bible to diagnose and work through your issues the way God intended. And our newest resource, Drive-By Biblical Counseling 3, could be the answer you've been looking for. It's a 63-lecture series that biblically tackles issues like abuse, self-harm, addictions, bullying, and suicide. If this is your first exposure to biblical counseling, get ready to be staggered by the Bible's ability to guide your life in every aspect. Grab your copy of Drive-By Biblical Counseling 3 today at wretched.org/counseling3. That's wretched.org/counseling and the word 3.
Attributes of God. Aseity is the word for God's self-existence. Nobody made God. God is the unmoved mover who causes all other things to be. All things depend on God for their continued existence. God does not need his creation. He chose to create us to glorify him and enjoy him forever. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Triggered! I'm triggered. This is Wretched Radio. Toe the nerve of somebody playing around with making fun of the state that I live in. Sent in from Cheryl to idea@wretched.org. Advice for anyone moving to Georgia. One, if you run your car into a ditch, don't panic. Four men in the cab of a four-wheel drive with a 12-pack of beer and a tow chain will be along shortly. Don't try to help them. Just stay out of their way. This is what they live for. Oh, that you can't possibly laugh. Get used to the phrase, it's not the heat, it's the humidity. And the collateral phrase, you call this hot, wait till August. If you're moving to Georgia, you should know if you think it's too hot, don't worry, it'll cool down. In December, these jokes are so offensive to me. Barbecue is a food group. It does not mean grilling burgers and hot dogs outdoors. It is actually, you go to get barbecue.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It's smoke-alicious. Yeah. Do not honk your horn at us to be obnoxious. We will sit there until we die. It's true, isn't it?
I really wish you would have forwarded that email to me before I moved here.
I told you about the traffic, mate.
You did.
You did not believe me,
did
you?
Not.
Like I didn't believe the guy who told me. Yeah, sure. It can't be that bad. I'm telling you, when I was commuting to InTouch, it was at least an hour each way every day. And you can't make a move in Atlanta. You see, the Midwest and all the way down into Texas, they have frontage roads. It's a brilliant concept because then you don't have to have all these stoplights so that people can turn off the highway to get to a store or to a restaurant. You just have an exit and then a frontage road and you do all your turning over there while the highway keeps, you know, zoom, 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 zoom. That's that way in Texas, all the way up, I think, to Minnesota. It's a brilliant system. They don't have that in Atlanta. So you can't make a move. There's nowhere to go. It's just you're locked in. Don't bother trying to change lanes. It just won't go any. You'll make it stop. And then you see the car that was in front of you pass you again and getting ahead of you. So you just sit there like the who is the hero in Princess Bride? What was that kid's whatever his name was in the you've seen the Princess Bride, haven't you?
I don't think so.
Oh, Jimmy.
I'm not a big movie watcher.
Oh, this is a classic. Mm. Have fun storming the castle. None of those great lines. You're not aware of any of those lines.
I am not.
All right, so the hero, Wesley, I think is his name. Wesley gets captured, and he's brought into the trunk of this huge tree, and he's spread out on a table, sort of a kind of an Inquisition-style rack, but they put suction cups on him that would suck years out of his life. So they would, you know, like suck out 5 years. Suck out 10 years until you die. That's what traffic is like in Atlanta. Just sucks the life out of you until you die.
Yep.
So I'm triggered from this email because we can't laugh about anything. We can't make jokes. I got to tell you, the world that is increasingly trying to doom scroll you and feed you full of bad news, the humor is going to go away. If the CRT business continues inside of comedy, laughter will go away because a joke always has a twist. And everything these days is deemed to be offensive if there is at all any sort of a twist or a recognition of something that is obvious. What a world, what a world. What a humorless, evolved world. Which leads us to the American Museum of Natural History. Please note, I did not just say Answers in Genesis. I just said the American Museum of Natural History. This is Evolution Central. Quote, in the 150 years since Charles Darwin speculated that humans originated in Africa, the number of species in the human family tree has exploded. But so has the level of dispute concerning early human evolution. Fossil apes are often at the center of the debate, with some scientists dismissing their importance to the origins of the human lineage and others conferring them starring evolutionary roles. Wait a second. You mean there's not unanimity inside of evolutionary science? This article gets more and more honest. A new review out on May 7th, that's a little dated, on the journal Science looks at the major discoveries in hominem origins since Darwin's works. Humans diverged from apes, specifically the chimpanzee lineage, they claim, at some point, please note the dates, between about 9.3 million and 6.5 million years ago. You know, 9.6, it's only 3 million years. They can't come closer than that. And this is what they teach our kids in the government schools to encourage them to have some sort of a framework to be able to cast off their belief and necessity for a God. We were just talking about this, I think, over the weekend. We were sitting outside. The weather in Georgia has been gorgeous. I mean, it has been spectacular spring. We had a good fall. This has been a great spring. God has been very, very kind. And we're sitting out on the back deck, and we were talking about blood circulation, because we've got free time, and we were talking about the digestive process and how complex it is. Without getting all medical on you, you have to have a mouth or a nose, two options, by the way, in case one gets plugged, so that you can gulp in oxygen, which has the nutrients that your lungs takes and converts, and your heart then shoves out to the rest of your body so that you can actually be ambulatory and conscious and alive at all. That is how complex our body is. That's just breathing. What about food? You have to have the chompers to chew it. You have to have the mandibles to be able to go crunch, crunch, crunch to tear the stuff up. Otherwise, you choke going down that hole. So you evolve teeth, apparently, so that you could chew the stuff to go where? Why didn't it just go like down the back hole and then just drop into an abyss? Because God designed the human body. How much more obvious could it possibly be that God designed the human body? This is why the fool says in his heart, there is no God. This is the most basic, obvious thing possible. Then the food gets down into your stomach. It starts a little sorting process. This goes here, that needs to go there. Your body takes it, carries it to its greatest needs. Make sure that your vitamin levels are running right. Make sure that you've got energy and strength stored. Otherwise, you do the ketosis business, which is another amazing system. If you don't have any carbs, your body will start to do what it takes, what it needs to do in order to keep you going. So it'll actually feed on itself, which is why that diet actually works, because it is a testimony that God made us. It's so obvious, and yet, between 9.3 and 6.5 million years ago, we're not exactly sure how this happened, but trust us, God doesn't exist. Here's from the article. When you look at the narrative of hominin origins, this is, by the way, from the scientist, a senior research scientist at the American Museum of Natural History, Division of Anthropology, and the lead author of this review said, when you look at the narrative for human origins, it's just a big mess. There's no consensus whatsoever. But believe, you know what we should do with this? We should do the same, you know, God doesn't exist because there's like 33,000 denominations, which is a miserable syllogism, nevertheless. We could say the same. There's like 33,000 different opinions about human origins. So Charles Darwin didn't exist. That's as logical as what they bring to us. Quote, people are working under completely different paradigms, and that's something I don't see happening in other fields of science. That's because evolution is not science. It's speculation. And I know what the clever atheist says. Well, that's what science is about. You keep testing it and fixing it and getting better at it. What does this have to do with our interpretation of bones? You're making stuff up. You can't sleuth what happened millions of years ago. There is no scientific consensus on the evolutionary role played by these fossil apes. Thank you for the honesty from the American History Museum, Natural History. Overall, the researchers found that most stories of human origins are not compatible with the fossils that we have today. Oh, so we have a little fossil record mess, do we? It is clear that a human evolutionary story based on the few ape species currently alive is missing much of the bigger picture, said the co-author of the study. Next time an atheist tries to persuade you that evolution is science, you can remind him, her, no, it's not. You can teach them about the digestive system, which came first, by the way. Your teeth, the tunnel, the receiver, the digestive juices to break it up. Wait, the kidneys to remove the waste. Which one came first? Because if they didn't all happen at the same time, there's no reason for their existence, and they would go away, a la irreducible complexity. Do not let your child gulp down this unscientific nonsense as if it's fact, because it has a very simple goal to try, and they're trying, to come up with a way that an intellectual can deny what is so basic and so obvious: God exists. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. Planned Parenthood filed a lawsuit yesterday to block the city of Lubbock, Texas, from banning abortions through its new Sanctuary for the Unborn ordinance. We first told you about that just a couple of weeks ago. In its lawsuit, Planned Parenthood of Greater Texas and its chief medical officer asked a federal judge to declare the ordinance as invalid, as they argue that it violates the U.S. Constitution and Texas law. The ordinance, though, may already be saving lives. According to the local news, Planned Parenthood said in the lawsuit that it canceled abortion appointments in the city after the ordinance passed because it fears liability. In response to the lawsuit, the city of Lubbock issued a statement promising to, quote, vigorously defend the ordinance in court. Good for them. This week's winner of Next Level Wokeism, that's going to go to Amazon, as they've announced a new Cinderella reboot, which will feature a fairy godmother that's being played by a gay black man. Yeah, you heard me right. Billy Porter is the actor that will play the iconic role, and he'll be known as Fab G in the film, which seeks to modernize the Cinderella tale as a pop musical for release on Amazon Prime Video in September. The only thing I can figure about this is it's too hard to be original. Otherwise, the woke would just create their own stories rather than destroying and tearing down the classics like Cinderella. But Amazon, Coke, Disney, all of these woke companies may want to rethink their wokeism and realize that woke actually, in reality, means broke. Take Saturday Night Live, for example. Their ratings fell this past week 27% from the week before to its lowest rating ever recorded in the history of the show. So that begs the question, is Saturday Night Live going to keep this woke agenda and ride it all the way to implosion? I guess if they do, they can be comforted by the fact that nobody will be watching. And in the state of Tennessee, Governor Bill Lee has signed a bill requiring children in government schools to use bathrooms and locker rooms that match their biological sex rather than their gender identification. Lee signed the Tennessee Accommodations for All Children Act last Friday, which specifies sex as a person's immutable biological sex as determined by anatomy and genetics existing at the time of their birth. Supporters of the legislation believe that the rules are vital to preserve the privacy and safety of women and girls. Opponents of the bill, on the other hand, believe it's a case of anti-LGBT bigotry, because obviously it's discrimination to not let a boy use the bathroom in a girl's bathroom with girls. I mean, honestly, I still can't believe this is an actual thing in the real world that we're debating. Come on, people. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 1054. Tensions between the East and the West had been brewing for centuries. But when negotiations between Rome and Constantinople went sour, both sides excommunicated each other, and the divide between Catholicism and Orthodoxy remains to this day. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The Bible, so practical. This is Wretched Radio. Received an email from somebody's response to my response to an email. Please track with us if you could. Sending in an email when we were talking about an individual who had expressed, eeks, do we want to bring kids into this world? Is it a good thing to do? And I said, yeah, it is. And because, first of all, that's I think that we are to be procreators as a rule. Not everybody. It's not a sin if you don't, unless, of course, your heart motivation is wrong. But we are to be baby makers. because they're image bearers of Almighty God. That is what we are bringing into this world. A child, a boy or a girl, who can reflect God's glories back to him by demonstrating, rightly and well, the attributes that God has built into the male and into the female. That's what we're doing when we have kids. So we should do that, and we need to remember historically there have been worse times to bring children into the world, but Christians always did. Why? Because they're a blessing. They're not a curse. Atheists would say they are. Liberals claim that children are terrible. Just heard a sermon from Mike Riccardi, and he was right. The world hates kids. The world just hates them. This is not an environment that's good for children. If they don't get vacuumed out of their mother's womb and they make it into this world, so often it is into torn families, broken families, not mother and father families. We send them off as quickly as we can to somebody else's care to educate them and indoctrinate them and teach them filthy things that no child should ever hear. The world hates kids. Christians love them. And so John sent this note. Regarding the caller that asked about bringing children into the depraved world, I believe there's a principle that answers that, starting in Jeremiah 29, verse 4. Well, John, I had to go rehitch my Old Testament, but here's what Jeremiah 4:29-4 says. Remember, they're captives. He's writing to captives, enslaved captives. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all who are carried away captive, whom I've caused to be carried away from Jerusalem to Babylon. God caused them to be carried away. Their sovereignty for you. Heard a great sermon from Alistair Begg a few days ago. He was talking about Psalm 2. The nations rage. They rage against God. And then what do we see in King David? Well, who is the lesser Jesus? He's the lesser Christ type. What do we see in David? The nations raging against him because he's a prefigurement of Jesus Christ. In Acts chapter 4, when Peter and John are getting into hot water from the government and the ruling officials, what verse did they quote? Psalm chapter 2. What is it when the government is trying to shut down Christ? It's Psalm chapter 2. It's a prophecy fulfilled is what it is. It explains why we see other religions that do atrocious things get a total pass. Why? Because they're on the same team as darkness. But Christianity is the light. The nations rage. And Alistair Begg was talking about a fellow whose name is, was it Josiah? I might have that wrong. Began with the letter J. So you can just Google that. You'll find it eventually. He was a fellow who actually spoke about the sovereignty of God. Going into battle, he was preparing, came up with a plan, a strategy, but then said, we leave it in the Lord's hands because we don't know what the outcome will be. So a guy who was actually a murderer, actually had some good theology. And so we hear that God is sovereign over everything. He's orchestrating everything as a part of his sovereign plan, even the bad stuff. So if they lost the battle, they would still say, that's the Lord's calling, and it is good because the Lord does what is right and best. And Alistair Begg was so right to encourage his flock to make sure you've got that theology of sovereignty embedded into your Christian DNA so that when bad things happen to you, and they're gonna, if you're not in it right now, they're gonna, that you can say it is well with my soul because the Lord does what is good and he is sovereign and he takes care of me and he wants me to have children if I can. Build houses, this is back to Jeremiah 29:5. Build houses and dwell in them. He's talking to captives. Plant gardens, eat their fruit, take wives, beget sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands so that they may bear sons and daughters, that you may be increased there and not diminished. And seek the peace of the city where I have caused you to be carried away captive. I got to tell you, some days it's helpful for me to remember the Jews in Babylonian captivity and that God told them to just be peaceable, just get along with the culture because you're there for a different reason. You're my people. And I have transported you there, and I want you there. we've been transported to another nation without getting on an airplane because God changed the nation underneath our feet. And it is such a reminder to me, okay, that's this describes me. This is I'm a stranger in a foreign land all of a sudden. Seek the peace of the city where I have caused you to be carried away captive and pray the Lord for it. For in its peace, you will have peace. Do not let your prophets and your diviners who are in your midst deceive you, nor listen to their dreams. For they prophesy falsely to you in my name. I have not sent them, says the Lord. He's telling them how they're to live. And I think by extension, this would be a good word for us, that we are to live peaceably in a very strange and foreign place. And have children if you can. There's no, I don't think that there should be a sermon that teaches you, you have to have as many kids. Get on it. Make more babies. Full quiver it. No, every husband and wife gets to decide that for themselves. And speaking of husbands and wives deciding for themselves, you, of course, a couple of weeks old now, heard about Bill and Melinda Gates getting divorced after 27 years. And the world was, shocked. But not if they're aware of what's been going on. Divorce after the age of 50, called gray divorce, has been in recent years on the rise, bucking an overall decline in divorcing among younger couples. So younger people are staying married. It's the older couples that are getting divorced. The reasons for older age divorces are often different than for younger ones. It's not necessarily acute conflict, but rather starting a new chapter. That prompts reassessment in a marriage. People are less willing to stay in these empty shell marriages that are not conflictual, but just not happy, says some commentator that they found for this article. Headline, Bill and Melinda Gates' divorce highlights rise of older age splits. I thought about Dr. John Street, went to a marriage seminar of his, two summers ago, perhaps, something like that. He was in Atlanta. And he actually explained why older people tend to get divorced. It's because they become so kid-centric. It's the focus of their lives is just the kids, to the exclusion of their marriage. And then the kids suddenly fly away, and there are the mommy and daddy bird in the nest all alone. And it's not uncommon for one of them to take flight and get out of there. Be careful. Your kid, we tried not to be a kid-centered home, but we were. It just happens. Be careful. Make sure that you are focusing on your marriage first. The happier your marriage is, the happier the kids are going to be, and the happier you're going to be when those kids leave you. Make sure that you are focusing on that. And as you potentially get older, you might be thinking not just about a marriage change, but a career change. And so it is. The Bible was really helpful. How do you make a decision about a career change when you're in your 50s, 60s, 70 years old? How do you do that? I was reading through 1 Corinthians 16, and it jumped out at me. Paul wanted Apollos to stay. Apollos went, I don't think so. Or he wanted him to go, and he was like, no, I don't think so. He didn't feel it. And so he did what he wanted to do, and Paul did not admonish him for it. That's interesting. 2 Corinthians 2 then says that Paul was in Troas and there was an open door of ministry. There was an opportunity for him to do something good there. But, he just, this just doesn't feel right. So he didn't do it. Be careful. An open door that appears to be an open door doesn't mean God wants you to walk through it. Having said that, how you process it, think about it, and conclude, that's very valid, and don't overlook that. But I think there's other columns for you to consider if you're thinking about a big life change. Yeah, the desires of your heart, it's definitely one of them. Do you like the idea? Don't like the idea? But there's other categories. There's practical stuff. Does this make sense? Can I afford it? What about my family? All of those practical issues. Not to mention, is that just the wisest thing for you to be doing, to be using your gifts in that way? Or are you called to simply stay, grind it out, and be faithful to the place where God has placed you? All of those things need to be weighed and balanced. Receive wise counsel on these things. Consider your preference. Make a decision, and that's God's will for your life. But all of those things need to be put in a pot and swirled around like a booyah so that you can ultimately come up with the biblical response to whatever your midlife crisis conundrum is. This is Wretched Radio. What does a young lady experiencing a crisis pregnancy sound like?
I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. Everybody wanted me to have an abortion.
Everybody wanted her to have an abortion, but she visited a preborn life center, saw a free ultrasound of her baby.
I'm going to keep my baby, and I'm going to be a great mom.
80% of the time, a woman in crisis sees an image of her child via a free ultrasound at a preborn center, they choose life. How many lives could you save per month? The answer is double. During the month of May, Preborn has received a generous gift of matching grants. Every dollar you give to Preborn will be matched. So $28 for an ultrasound will now provide two ultrasounds. How many lives could you save? Visit preborn.org/wretched.
Did you know Wretched has a brand new Bible study curriculum? Tell the truth, you didn't know. But now you do because I just told you. And listen, this Bible study curriculum is not like any that you ever encountered. The new Wretched Bible studies are interesting. They're relevant. And of course, if they're coming from Wretched, you know they're biblical. They're based on our resources, Drive by Marriage, Drive by Parenting, Drive by Theology, Herman Who, Jesus Unmasked, Stressed Out, It's Not Greek to Me, and Road Trip to Truth. You're going to find something that's perfect for your youth group, your adult small group, and even your own personal study at home. So if you're tired of the same old, boring, wretched Bible studies, then get yourself a Wretched Bible Study. Check all of them out right now by visiting wretched.org/study. That's wretched.org/study. I promise you're going to be pleased and you're going to wonder to yourself, why in the world did they not do this sooner? Wretched.org/study. Sometimes you got to give the devil his due. He's good at what he does. He's been a murderer from the beginning. His MO has not changed in 6,000 years. He is a deceiver. But you know what? Jesus is much better at what he does, which is truth-telling and life-giving. If you've ever found yourself deceived by Satan, listen, you don't have to remain there. Biblical counseling can help you learn to use the Bible to diagnose and work through your issues the way God intended. And our newest resource, Drive by Biblical Counseling 3, could be the answer you've been looking for. It's a 63-lecture series that biblically tackles issues like abuse, self-harm, addictions, bullying, and suicide. If this is your first exposure to biblical counseling, get ready to be staggered by the Bible's ability to guide your life in every aspect. Grab your copy of Drive by Biblical Counseling 3 today at wretched.org/counseling3. That's wretched.org/counseling3.
Books of the Bible. Lamentations is a book of poems written by Jeremiah after the fall of Jerusalem. They are marked by weeping, woes, and affliction. But even in sorrow, Jeremiah praises God. He proclaims God's justice, cries out to God for mercy, and confesses his faith in God. Lamentations teaches us a godly way to express sorrow and grow in the midst of loss. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's visit two institutions, shall we? This is Wretched Radio. Institution number one, Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, headed up by Al Mohler. He recently received an open letter. That's right. Al Mohler receiving an open letter. It was published in different Christian publications, the Courier Journal for one, from a female pastor in Louisville. Upset with Dr. Mohler because he's holding the line on the ordination of female pastors. I thought it was worth a gander. I recognize, she writes, that you and I don't see eye to eye on women in ministry, and I have no intention of trying to change your mind. Guess what word comes next? But, quote, I feel no need to try to defend myself to you or the calling that God has placed on my life. So a subjective feeling overrides what the scripture says. Instead, I want to say to you today is this. I'm sorry your God is so small. That's right. That's the argument. I'm sorry your God is so small that God can only speak through less than half of the human race. See, if you're going to make a lame argument, I would have made it. I would have put the cast on the other leg. You would say that God is small if he needs both genders to speak for him. Nevertheless, that's her argument. I'm sorry your God is so limited that God cannot be present with a person in pain, hold the hand of someone in the hospital, or offer a blessing over a newborn baby, at least not if these types of care are coming from a female pastor or an LGBTQIA plus pastor, for that matter. I'm sure Dr. Moeller was rocked. Not a Bible verse in the entire letter. Not one. Nothing. No scripture. No support. Just my feeling and a pretty lame accusation. Your God is too small. As if that has anything to do with the subject. Don't forget, if God didn't assign roles, this world would be Lord of the Flies, cuckoo, ka-choo, crazy, insane, chaotic, miserable, more wicked, more evil, more dangerous. That's what the world would be like if God didn't say, governments, I'm going to give you some of my authority. Our homes would be that way if parents weren't in charge of the kids. The workplace would be an absolute disaster if there weren't bosses and employees. God has systems. And when it comes then to who does what job, we need to remember what our job is. Whether you eat, whether you drink, whatsoever you do, do all unto the glory of God. That's why we're here. It's not to do this radio program. It's not to do your job, whatever it is. You're raising the kids. That's a great job, Mom. You are working in something that the world would go, ho-hum. No, that's not your job. You're an attorney. You've got a corner office. And the world goes, whoa, you've made it. That's not your job. Your job is to glorify God. The question is, how do we do that? It is by reflecting his attributes that he has built into us. And this is not to suggest that men and women don't share these attributes at some point. But predominantly, it's so obvious. God has made men one way and woman another way. It's obvious that we have different attributes. And we glorify God when we play our role in the gender that he has designed for us, in the systems that he has defined for us. We glorify him to the max. That's what we're doing. Did that female pastor consider that? No. Did she include any Bible verses to counter it? No. Let me take you to another campus. This was written by Anna Keating. You need to know who Anna is. Quote, I am a liberal, a feminist, and myself a product of an elite university. And so she's writing from an elite university. You need to hear what is going on in this institution. Quote, from a liberal. The liberalism we all grew up with relegated religion to the private sphere, which is unfortunate because Christianity doesn't do that, but I get what she's saying. And though this was an overly restrictive way of thinking about religion, at least it tolerated religious minorities unless they broke laws or infringed on the rights of others. She recognizes that's not the way it is anymore. Liberalism's commitment to that kind of pluralism has been eroded by what the writer Wesley Yang calls the successor ideology. It's rooted in critical race theory, the wrecking ball of our culture, of the Ibram X. Kendi and Robin DiAngelo school. Please note those names. Jimmy, you just delivered a speech in Tennessee.
I did.
On critical theory. How was that received, by the way?
Very well received.
Sweet. It was good.
Yeah.
I read it. It was excellent.
Thank you.
And the group, it was about 100 men were at this men's.
Yeah, and it was all.
Just, we're going to have to edit this because you shouldn't do a men's conference because, well, that would be.
That's offensive.
It's something. I'm sure of it. I know that it is. There are about 100 guys there, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And all white.
No, not at all.
So you guys got into a fist fight.
I, you know what? When I started, I thought maybe, but man, it was so sweet.
Why?
Because they understand the problem behind this ideology.
and how much better Christian unity is.
Yes.
Because that's what half of your shebang was about. It wasn't as much about critical theory as it is unity that we have in Christ.
Right.
And it's just better than this awful philosophy that is terrible. And two of the big authors are Ibram X. Kendi and Robin DiAngelo. This ideology, writes the liberal, is far less tolerant of Jewish kids gathering for Shabbat or Catholic kids for Mass. Under the influence of this form of ideological thinking, students were coming to view religious services or religious observances as part of the structure of white supremacy. This woman was to be a chaplain on an elite university. It doesn't mention which one in the article. Who knows? Doesn't matter. They're all doing this. And she was realizing, whoa, it's getting harder and harder to admit that you're, in her instance, Catholic on campus. She writes, "The drive to eliminate whiteness, masculinity, heteronormativity on college campuses has made entire religious traditions suspect, particularly those that are absurdly lumped together as a part of Western spirituality." In his book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, this is fascinating, which the college followed in formulating its anti-racist plan. That's a big word, being anti-racist. You'll follow in a moment. Kendi, Ibram X. Kendi, explains that ideas are either racist or anti-racist. Oh, who knew? Well, he does. Bad or good, for Kendi, the disease of racism is not about individual bias or acts of discrimination, but systems that allow for disparate outcomes among groups. And so, they go about the business then of doing what? Breaking down the groups. And in this instance, it's on a public university campus. Religious organizations are seen as being white supremacist and need to be torn down. From the liberal who wrote this article, "College administrators made it clear to me that members of certain religious groups were overrepresented on campus. This is why the college wanted to get rid of chaplaincy programs, because they determined that unless on this campus it matches the culture at large, then it's racist. So they've got to go." I know this thinking is really detached from sanity. But this is our world, and this is what's going on university campuses. Why do I bring this up? Because this is what will go on in your church if you invite it in. If you give it quarter, if you let the nose underneath the tent, critical race theory will creep its entire body in, and it will do everything destructive in your church that it does on university campuses, and potentially more. Tearing down of icons. Don't ever read somebody who lived at a time when people were deemed all racist. Can't do that. So don't think about quoting Martin Luther. Don't think about quoting John Calvin, John Knox, John Wesley. Don't think about doing any of that, because that would be racist. You think that that won't happen? It will. "Telling me that the number one priority of the college is anti-racism," my supervisor in student life explained. My supervisor was echoing Ibram X. Kendi, who writes, quote, "If discrimination is creating equity, then it is anti-racist." Did you catch that? So I can discriminate against you if it brings about equity. So I can treat you in the way I'm telling you to not treat people, because if it brings about fairness, then it's acceptable. Machiavelli would be thrilled with his thinking. It's pragmatic to the core. Inequity in this case means any difference between ethnic groups that isn't reflected in the racial demographics of the United States. Because Jews, being a tiny percentage of the U.S. population, were overrepresented in higher education, that means Jews need to be discriminated against. And you go, why? That's not wrong. That's being anti-racist. She writes, "In the hermetically sealed world of campus progressivism, the fact that all of this sounds more than a little anti-Semitic is mostly ignored." And so it is. We see a new word introduced into the CRT debate, which is on university campuses, it's in businesses, it's in government, and if you let it into your church, it's gonna take it over. Until tomorrow.
Go serve your king.